Transcriber. My name is Eric Elliott. I'm with the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, and this is an interview for the Women Veterans Historical Project at the university. Today I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. It is the 14th of December in the year 2000, and I am here at the home of Elaine Anderson this afternoon. And Ms. Anderson, thank you for agreeing to this exercise and self-confession, or whatever we may call it. But I hope we're going to have a good conversation. I think it should be a pleasant experience. I'm going to ask you at the beginning the same highly technical question which I ask everybody at the start is, and that is, where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in Galesville, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Grew up in Galesville, Wisconsin.
How many people live in Galesville?
Last time I looked, it was 1,190.
Okay. So, small town life.
It is small town.
Everybody knows everybody.
And everybody's business.
How did your family end up being in Galesville?
Well, my father was from that area. And my mother was just from across, over in Minnesota. And that's how I met over there. That's how they met, and that's where they raised all their kids.
Right. But what did they do for work, both of them?
Well, my dad was a truck driver. And, mm-hmm. And different things. It was all, a lot of it was during the Depression, so whatever you could do.
Now, when were you born? What year?
1926.
And your mom, did she stay home with the kids?
She raised.
How many kids? How many brothers and sisters you have?
I had. There was eight of us. Sister died and the brother died. Brother died just a few years ago.
Okay. Are you oldest, youngest, in the middle?
I'm the second to the oldest. I have an older brother who was in World War II.
Okay. You went to, was it a...
Galesville High School.
One I was going to say, was one room school, was it a unity school where the school went everybody through, or what kind of school?
Yeah, was it? Was all the grades. They didn't have kindergarten then. It was just all grade school and high school. Was upstairs.
All in one building?
Yes.
Wow, so you had to really like your classmates. Yeah, no changes.
There was no change.
But with that, I imagine though, this was a farm, it was safe to say farming community?
Farming community. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So childhood, pretty pleasant memories for you then.
Well, yeah, I knew everybody. And, yeah.
Did you have? Were you somebody who liked school growing up?
It was all right. I knew I had to go, but as I mature, I find learning is much more exciting.
So it wasn't your favorite thing
No.
at the time. Did you have an idea when you were younger? Or did you have a favorite subject in school?
I'd always liked history and geography.
Mm-hmm. Did you have an idea when you were younger what you wanted to be when you grew up?
No.
You graduated from... in North Carolina, we were a little slow in getting 12-year high schools. I imagine if you 26, when did you graduate from?
44.
44. So it was a 12-year school.
Yes.
Okay. What did you do after graduation?
I clerked in the grocery store for a while, and then I went to Washington, D.C. for a year during height of the World War II and worked in what they called the casualty department. And then I, after a year and just before Japan surrendered, I went back and I worked in a dry goods store from about 46 of it or to...
back 40, in Galesville?
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask you a few questions about that, because you're old enough to have an understanding of what's going on with the war. You had an older brother, you say, who was in the war. Do you remember, we just a couple of days past it, do you remember Pearl Harbor Day?
Yes.
What were you doing? What's your memory of that?
I remember my dad always had control of the radio, and I had gone to Sunday school and came back, and it was on the radio then. And I remember it was cold. It was a Sunday about like this, kind of overcast and everything. And just listening to different speeches on the radio, so I don't remember anybody distinctly, but
right. You would have been probably, what, freshman in high school, something like that, or getting close to high school?
I'd
14,
been in
15.
High school.
And I know that people had been talking about, I mean, did you have a sense of the war before that time? I
had no idea.
How much older was your older brother than you?
I think he's 3 years older.
Was he immediately drafted, or how did he get to
No,
the war?
He wasn't immediately drafted. I know. I think he probably went in last part of 42 or 40, first part of 43, if I remember correctly.
How was life in school different for you during the war? What was school? Did they do anything different in school?
Yeah,
about war bonds or things like that?
No, not so much war bonds, but we went to school five and a half days a week because it was a farming community and they needed the people to work on the farms, the young men. So we'd go to school on Saturday mornings. And so we didn't... See, we quit our schools, I think it was first part of May. And usually it was the first part of June, and then so people could help on the farms.
So when the farm work was the most, they let you have more time off. When you were in school, what branch of service did your brother end up doing?
He was in the Army.
Trying to think of things that might have influenced your choices later on.
No.
Was your family, because you had him in the Army? Were you sort of an Army family? Dad ever in the military?
No.
It was a new experience for your family, this military experience. Mm-hmm. Where was your brother stationed during the war?
I don't know where I think he was in California for a while. And then he was in Germany.
So, how did you get the... You graduated in 44. I guess you probably... Once you go to D.C., had the war in Europe already ended when you went to D.C.?
No, it ended in May of 45. So I went... Must have been November, December of 44.
How did you find out about that job? Was this the first time you had been on a big trip away from home?
Yes.
How did you get from Galesville of population 1190 to big Washington, D.C.?
Well, there was several girls that I'd heard about, and another girl and I went out there because we met some girls we had gone to school with out there.
So it was just a bunch of you going up together. Did you all stay in the same apartment up in D.C.?
Some of us did. Yeah, we had there was three of us to one room, and I think there was 11 girls in the house and one bathroom.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a recipe for success, does it?
And we had to eat most of our meals out once in a while when the landlady was in good mood. She'd let us use the kitchen.
Well, I've heard from people who were in D.C. during the war that it was just so hard to find a place.
Oh, I know it.
What was that like for you going off to the big city? Were you scared of going to the big city, or what was that experience? Exciting?
It was exciting and a new adventure for me.
What about the work there? What kind of work did you do at the casualty department?
I worked in the casualty department where all the casualties, MIAs, dead.
So were you typing up letters of notification?
Typing up letters, and then it was filmed through, not filmed, it was given through another department, and they would notify the families.
Okay. And I assume at that work, was your supervisor civilian or military?
Civilian.
Okay. You ended that work because, I guess if you're in D.C., there's a couple events that I can ask you about from a perspective both of your age and your location was there. You were in town when Roosevelt passed away.
Yes.
What do you remember about that day?
Well, I remember the shock, and I remember when the horse-drawn carriage, because they let us out to go down along the street to observe the caisson going down with his body. We didn't work too far from there, and was what they used to call the old munitions building, which just had a lot of offices in there. I remember that, and I remember that was in April, and I remember Eisenhower coming back from Europe, and there was a big parade and much to do about him going down the main streets of Washington.
So every time there's a parade, you got out of work, is what it amounted to, right?
Well, and...
You were there, and when did you leave that job? Was it late in 45 then?
No, I left there the end of July of 45.
Okay.
And just got back to Galesville when the war in Japan was over.
What was that celebration like in the town of 1190?
Sorry, what did we do? I don't even remember.
Just more relief, I guess, that things
ended. Yeah, as far as I can remember.
You worked at this dry goods store there in town.
Mm-hmm.
How long were you at that job?
I guess about 3 years.
What was the name of that place?
Gilbertson Meyer. It's an old family dry goods store.
Okay. When you were working in D.C. and having a brother in the service during the war, they had this new thing start with women in the service. What did you think of the idea of women joining the service before you did it yourself? What did you think of it?
I thought it was a pretty smart thing to do.
Had you ever entertained the idea of joining?
Well,
at that earlier stage?
Not at that earlier stage. Because, see, I couldn't even go to Washington until I was 17 and a half. They wouldn't let you go.
So they wouldn't let you work at the casualty department till that time?
No, that's why I didn't go until November.
Most of the branches, you're right, you had to be 21 to get and get your parents' permission to join.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think about joining? Was that a possibility for you down the road? At this time, when you were working at the dry goods store, when did it first come into your mind to join the service?
Well, I knew that if I went, I would get some traveling in, and I knew I couldn't make the money travel like I like to travel. I still like to travel. And I just knew I had to get away because there was a lot of family problems, and I just had to get away and think about me for once.
Right. Were you living at home the whole time you were at the dry goods place?
I was living at home.
Yeah. So in 48... you left the dry goods?
No, 49, June of 49.
June of 49. Mm-hmm. And you left right from the dry goods work to go into the service?
Yes.
Why was it that you picked the Army as opposed to another branch, you think?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Was there a recruiting station you had to go to? Probably yeah. Wasn't one in Galesville.
There was one in Galesville.
You had to go to La Crosse?
La Crosse.
Okay. So you were going in by yourself, no friends?
No friends. I had. There was another girl that I met that was going that same day.
Okay.
I think she was from down below La Crosse, probably Sparta or somewhere.
Right. I know at different times they'd had different advertising efforts to get women in, and one of the things that happened, I guess, 48, you're talking about Truman a minute ago, Truman signed that bill in 48 formally integrating women into the service on a full-time basis. But there were not a lot of women joining the service, were there, when you went in?
No. See, my oldest brother that was in the Army thought I was the dregs of society for doing that. He wouldn't even speak to me for months.
Was there still concerns about the character of women who would join the service?
Mm-hmm.
And he had been in the service still felt that way. Even though most people you talk to, they say that's just nothing but BS and rumor that somebody put out.
I agree.
So brother didn't like it, and I guess did his opinion sway the family to feeling the same way? Or?
My dad never said anything one way or the other. My mother was upset that I was going away.
Just going away was upsetting.
Because I was always the one to help her at home with financial and raising the rest of the kids.
Right. You went, when you signed up, how long was the tour of duty? 3 years? Was that what the...
3 years.
3 years. Did you get a chance to express an area of interest on what you want to do, or how did they?
Well, at that time they were taking what you had done before, and see, I'd always worked somehow, either with cashiering or clerking, and then I did the books for this dry goods store, so naturally I went into finance.
Did you, I guess, had to take a series of tests or something to for that and aptitude?
Yeah.
When you signed up at La Crosse, your basic, you were telling me, was at Fort Lee.
Fort Lee, Virginia.
What was basic like for you? What do you recall about basic training?
It was hard. Like, you get in there at 2 o'clock in the morning, you got to get up at 5, you know, and it was hot in June. See, it was June, July, and August, and I wasn't used to that heat.
Mm.
And we had these old wooden barracks, you know, and it was just kind of rough, and that constant spit and polish was, I just couldn't follow it all, but I passed everything.
And how long was basic for you? 6, 8 weeks? What was it?
I think it was eight weeks, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe longer.
Were your instructors at this time, were they men or women?
Women.
All women. When you were at basic, I guess, how tight was the lockdown? Were you able to go out in the evenings or weekends? How strict were they?
We'd get a weekend pass once in a while.
But you always had to be in uniform?
Yeah.
Do you recall what it was like first being in that uniform and going out with the civilians again? What was that feeling like? What, did you get response like your brother, or was it more open?
Well, no. It was more open, I guess, but when we'd get our passes, 6, 8 of us would go into town in Petersburg and then go back, and that was about our getting out. And I was just a little small-town country girl, you know, I didn't know what everything was going on in this world.
What was it like? I mean, were there a lot of other people from the Midwest who were there in that group? I know one of the first things that happens when you go into service is they mix you up with people from many and everywhere.
Oh, mixed us up with a lot of people, yeah.
You were at Fort Lee for about 8 weeks, and then you were telling me you went to finance school in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. How long was that?
I think that was like from September to probably January.
So you were had a 3-month commitment, and basically the first 6 months they took training you.
Yeah.
When you were at St. Louis, was that like an 8-to-5 schedule on them?
They had barracks. We had to live in the barracks, and school was on there, and right on the grounds, and.
When you finished finance school, what was your rank when you came out of finance school?
I think it was PFC.
Okay. So was there like a special badge or insignia you got as a graduate of the finance school, or was that just?
No, I don't remember.
And then the main course of that study would be in accounting and.
Well, that they put us in payroll.
Okay.
Payroll is quite screwed up, not screwed up, it's so different than what it is now.
Yeah.
And
at this time, I guess, is before you had computerized payroll.
Amen. We'd had a couple little hand adding machines.
All those, everything has a button, there's a huge button array.
Pull the lever.
Yep. There is something comforting about seeing a tape go by as you're doing it, isn't there?
There is.
When you left the finance school, what did you think of St. Louis, by the way? That was a pretty big city.
It was a big city. I liked St. Louis.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did a lot of things there because there wasn't anything on the base to do except the NCO Club.
Did the women who were in the going through the training with you, did you all socialize together at all these places, or pretty much everybody do their own thing?
No, we were a pretty close-knit group in St. Louis.
After you left St. Louis, you went to the Army Chemical Center, mm-hmm. which you were telling me is outside Baltimore near Fort Meade.
Mm-hmm.
What goes on at that particular? Is that a testing for chemical weapons, or is it just analysis? Or?
You know, I've forgotten, but I don't think it's existing any longer.
Right.
But they must have been testing chemicals and stuff, because I was only there. Because I went overseas in May, so I wasn't there.
Had you expressed the desire to go overseas before getting the transfer?
No.
So you went over in May of 50.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. About the time you're going over, Korean conflict breaks out.
It started right after we got over there. So a lot of the men that were over there were sent to the Korean conflict, and then we filled in a lot of the jobs that they had over there.
Was there any kind of a warning, or how did that news?
I don't remember.
You know, Pearl Harbor is such a quick start.
I really don't remember. I just remember seeing that we had to replace some men that were being shipped over there.
So you were...
See, I didn't have my assignment when I first got over to Europe.
Right. So you were doing what they talked about in World War II as freeing a man to fight. That's what you were doing, in a sense, wasn't it, again?
Mm-hmm.
Back to that role. What was your work when you got to Bremerhaven?
Payroll.
But that was a job that had been done by a man up to that time.
And see, we also were stationed up there in the port, and people coming and going, dependent, you know, the dependents, and we always went down to the ships and changed money and so on.
How many people stationed at that base? Sound like it's pretty big. I know that port area is huge.
Yeah,
Bromberg,
the port area. There was probably about 2,500 of military right there on the compound, and then there was Navy had about 100 people there, and we were just in the enclave. See, the American zone was down further. We were just in a little enclave. We were actually in the British enclave, just but Americans had a little bit of a place. See, the British had Hamburg
still split up into the three zones in the West at that time. And of course, had the Berlin airlift ceased by then, I guess, by the time you got over? You're still conducting that?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this thing going on in Korea. There's also, you're at an area of very high tensions with East and West right there, with going on.
Mm-hmm.
Are you concerned or afraid in any way going over there?
Mm-mm. No, I always felt secure.
So traveling in and of itself never was a problem for you?
No, I love to travel.
I think one of the things that when I talk to people, they say that that if nothing else the military does, is it does make you independent.
Yes.
You were at, did you stay at Bremerhaven then until the time
I came back
you left the surface?
Yes, and came back in October 52.
October 52. So were you doing the same work from May of 50 to 52 there in payroll at Bremerhaven the whole time?
Mm-hmm.
Was that an unusually long stay there, or were there a lot of turnover, or how?
No, there wasn't. It wasn't too long of a stay. See, I came home to get married, and it didn't materialize.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably would have stayed in if that hadn't happened. But I had left, I had a pretty good position over there, and I was head of the payroll department. And
so how many people were you supervising at that time?
I had probably about five or six Germans and about five or six GIs, women and men.
Germans on staff. Is that because there were Germans in the employ at the base, or just your company?
No.
Helping them get back on their feet.
No, they did a lot of it. Just to adding work. I'd say adding work, and then we had a couple of girls that were real good typists and so on.
Coming just out of the war, what? How did that experience change it? I mean, you can, and of course, I know there's a lot of people German heritage up in Wisconsin, just like
yeah,
in North
part,
Carolina.
I'm half German.
So, I mean, how was that experience of going over there? Well, was that different than what you expected? What was the surprise about going to Germany?
The surprise was the terrible devastation. I had a friend, a German girl, that worked there, and she'd invite me out to her house. Her father was a ship owner. He had always had a big shipping line. He had a beautiful home, like we would say Myers Park or something. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Americans took those houses. And she invited me up to her house for dinner a couple times. But when you went there, you had to go up to the back of a bombed out building just like this to get up those steps and stuff. And some of the bridges, and you go out in the countryside. We did a lot of bike riding out there. And but the devastation is just unbelievable.
This was largely through, of course, I don't know that unlike now where you've got so many landmines, I guess the front changed so fast here at the end with bombing and artillery. It just, they literally gave it up an inch at a time coming across as the invasion took place. So you were good friends with this girl.
The German girl.
What was her name?
Tia, and she married one of the officers that I had worked for. And when I was in the reserves, this is ironic, I think, I was up at Fort Knox, and I heard, it was at PX with some of the fellows, and heard somebody holler at me, Andy, they always call me Andy in the service. I looked around, and I thought, who is that? And here was this girl, she, her husband had been transferred over to Fort Knox, and
oh, that's great.
She was really a nice girl.
Yeah.
And I was so surprised, you know, that many years and the difference.
That's great. That she would seek you out and go right there to you. You were there to 52, and I guess the Korean conflict's going on the whole time during that time.
Mm-hmm.
When you were working, was your immediate supervisor a man or a woman?
Man.
How was the relationship between men and women in the service during the time you were there?
Well, it was pretty good. The men always wanted to be in charge, you know, even if they were your equal rank. They were the ones. But the officers that I worked with as a whole were very nice.
So you didn't have any problem with, I guess, what would be called today sexual harassment or anything like that? That wouldn't.
No, I don't.
So they were fairly professional during the time that was there. Except for the male ego, which we know will always get in the way.
Yeah.
So. You're there until October 42, and you say you decided to come out for other reasons,
mm-hmm.
other than military
yeah.
reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then are back. Did you come back to Galesville?
Yes, I went there, and I went down to Madison Business School for about a year and worked for a CPA down there for a couple of years.
Mm. Okay. So it was about 56 or so. How long were you working in Madison? Did you go from Madison straight here to Charlotte?
Yeah.
So you came down here, you're telling me, in 55?
Yeah, see, I quit my job up and working for that CPA. I didn't really like that kind of work, and I had a chance to get a job at the, that time it was Patrick Air Force Base down there in Melbourne, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down there and I didn't like it. So I stopped here to visit a girl that had been my roommate in Europe. And she had a child who was blind, and her husband was in Korea, and I used to date him in Europe. And I said, well, I'll stay till Paul gets back. I got this job with Pelton Crane and stayed there till I retired.
Yeah. That's great. When And you went back, though, you were telling me, into the reserves in 58. What was it that you went back to the reserves?
I just thought I would be interesting. Mm-hmm. And
were you recruited to get back in the reserves, or just sort of informal conversations with other veterans?
Just what I'd heard around some of the people that I'd met. And,
what was involved in getting back to the reserves? Just showing up at the recruiting office and signing some papers?
No, I just went out to the Reserve Center out here in Westover Street. And, mm-hmm. That's how I got in.
You were telling me that when you left at discharge, your rank was staff sergeant. Did you change your rank through the reserves? Or I know some people with correspondence courses or whatnot.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I did have a chance to get a commission during the Cuban crisis, I believe it was. And then they wanted me to go back in, and I said, no, I'll just stay where I was.
You didn't want active duty again, huh?
Mm-mm.
And you were doing the reserve for about 10 years?
I think it was about 10 years, huh?
Okay. So Vietnam War was going on pretty strong when you left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. During any time in your service experience, were you ever afraid?
I don't ever remember being afraid.
What about as a consequence of meeting people like Tia and the guy that said, let's go back to the States, and a whole bunch of other people who walked through the door at Bremerhaven and St. Louis? Are there some memorable characters or incidents that stand out in your mind? One of the questions that I'm supposed to ask people that I never feel comfortable with is, what is the most embarrassing moment you remember from your military service? So I find it easier for people to talk about other people's embarrassments.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that embarrassed me is they would call us out for fire drill in the morning, you know, and all the men and women have to line up out behind the barracks, and we'd have all these, you know, how your woman's hair gets and everything, out there in the morning, cold and damp, and throw your trench coat on, and oh, you think, oh, what will these people think of it?
There goes Saturday night's date.
But we had, during the, Vietnam War, I think it was Vietnam War, started, and we had some young fellows come in. They were all college graduates, and they were the nicest kids. We had, really had a good group, you know. They were married and had families back here in the States, and they did their best to make a good life for themselves over there, and not run around, but I mean, having fun and all good,
sure.
Clean
good
fun.
Right.
Just really had good, clean fun and some nice kids.
Good. You were in at a time that they were not. In fact, I know if you just look at the numbers, it's a time that the military is actively getting women out. You chose to come out for other reasons. Had anybody ever talked to you about reenlistment? Obviously, if you had progressed to being head of the payroll department over that many folks.
No, but I kind of knew what I wanted, and I would have stayed in, you know, if that hadn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to stay over there, and I liked it over there.
So the option of having a career wasn't anything that the military did yay or nay to dissuade you or encourage
no.
you for that.
No.
You just made the decision to come out. If you were... knowing what you know about the service today and comparing it to your own experience, if a young woman were to come to you today and said, what do you think, should I join the service? What would you tell her?
Yes, I think that the discipline is very much needed in this world. And they can learn to take care of themselves. So many expect someone else to take care of them, and I don't. You got to do it yourself.
Your military experience play into your work outside of the military? Was it an advantage being a vet?
Well, I felt it was. Some of the people didn't think it. They said I was a little bit bossy. I didn't know this until I retired. They used to call me Sarge behind my back. But
so never let them know that was your rank, because they'll use it whether or not it's true.
It's people that had never had any kind of discipline and so
right.
on, you know. And you do it right. And I couldn't work in this workaday world.
Very free verse. It is a different way of doing things, and if the goal is getting things right, it's amazing how, I don't know how people have problems with that. You were there also at a time, I guess, did you feel that you're talking about even of equal rank, men wanted to be in charge, but how do you think the opportunities for women compared within the service as opposed to outside in terms of advancement and career possibilities? From your view when you were in the service, what did it look like? Was it?
It was harder for women to get up the ranks, especially if you weren't in the, not the enlisted.
Was it harder for an commission. NCO? It was harder for somebody without a woman without a commission?
I think so.
A lot of the people, of course, that I'm talking to who are were college alumni from WC, they went in as second lieutenant. Most of them came out as second lieutenant because they were there for a short time. But that is interesting. Was that more of a social thing, or just the fact that the variety of jobs were different, the opportunities for advancement were different?
I think it had a lot of social thing. I really do. The old adage was still there that women are supposed to be under a man's thumb.
You can answer this question, whereas somebody who didn't serve in the Army couldn't. You were part of the Women's Army Corps. That ended in 1976, 77, whatever it was. Do you think it's a good thing that women are part of the regular Army now, or do you wish they'd still be separate?
I think it probably would be more advantageous to be separate.
Why is that?
You don't have to have that feeling of competition with the men. And we had to go out and rifle practice and driving trucks. They took the women out over there just to show you how I feel that the men always tried to dominate. It was too cold for the men to go out on rifle practice out on the rifle range, but then they'd send the women out. Yes, sir.
Did you have to have rifle training, I guess, as part of?
That was, we didn't in, I don't remember doing it in basic, but I remember over there it was so cold and trying to hit that target when you're shaking so bad.
I know I've talked to some women who worked in payroll that because they had no money, they were actually issued a revolver to protect the cash.
Yes, you know, we would go down to change ships, you know, change money on ships, right. And the fellows would go with us. They'd carry a revolver. I'll never forget one time I was changing money and some officer coming over, he said, "Who left that pistol?" He just pointed right at you. And one time another girl and I was on our jeep that took us down there, took us down to the docks. Somehow they went and left, she and I left us down there with bukus of money. We're walking around the queue.
So you yourself didn't have to carry them?
No.
And you're glad for that, I take it. If I were to ask you to name a song or a movie that when you hear it or see it makes you think of those times in service, what would it be for you?
Think of anything right now. I know the Colonel's Boogies was one of them. And,
did you sing that song, Duty Is Calling You and Me?
Yes.
How does that go?
I don't know the tune. Duty Is Calling You and Me. We Have a Destiny or something.
But this was the march, yeah. The Colonel Bogey march,
yeah.
Song. Da 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 da. Bridge Over the River Kwai is how I remember it.
Yeah, that's it. There was another song that came out that I think of so often. And I know the band director, you know, I had a band when the ships came in and out. He was a fun guy. And he'd always, when the fellows were coming west, good or English, we're coming over, he'd start playing, "I Wonder Who's Kissing Her Now," and those guys would just...
That sounds cruel.
he was just like that. He was a
Just right. While your girlfriends are away, I wonder who's kissing her now. That's hilarious.
He was a Filipino, but he was a lot of fun.
I remember talking to somebody who was at, I guess, Norfolk. They would always be like, over there for going out and sentimental journey for coming back home, but I like the humor in that one. For your experience, that you know, you can't live your life over again as much as you'd love to, parts of it, but when you look back to your time in the service, if you had to do it over again, would you?
Yes, because I think it made me grow up in a lot of ways and made me much more self-reliant. And I met so many interesting people.
What is the biggest misconception that people who aren't or who have not been in the military have about the military, you think?
They think they're out of mark. Try to give the impression that everybody in the services are too stupid to do another kind of a job, and they have to be told what to do. And that really bugs me, because there's some very intelligent people in there.
Do you think that's changed, or that has gotten worse since we went to an all-volunteer army, or?
I think so. I think it's gotten worse since we went to an all-volunteer army.
We were talking before we started the tape about how just a year or so ago they had first sent a woman into combat with a fighter pilot in Iraq. One of the things that people still have misgivings about is whether all jobs in the military ought to be open to women. You were there for 3 years. How do you feel about that?
No, I don't think so. I think there's just some things that women should not be allowed to do. And of course, I dislike the idea of these women going right frontline combat. You don't know when they're captured what's going to happen to them. That's my biggest problem.
Even though that might affect their ability for advancement and promotion, you still would say don't let them.
I agree. I don't think they should.
The work that you were doing for almost... Well, when did you retire from your work with
Pelton Crane?
Pelton Crane here in town.
March of 90.
So you were doing... Were you doing payroll work there?
I was doing... I went from accounts receivable and accounts payable onto everything, and then I just took over all the payroll and all the taxes and stuff.
And in the process, you learned a lot about computers?
Well, we didn't have too many. I've learned some, yeah.
I guess that's really...
But I tell you, it's changed so that...
Be glad you're out. Be glad you're out. And you say you still like to travel. So you've been traveling since then?
Oh, yeah. I traveled when I get my vacation. The year before I had my... No, in 88. 88, I went to Australia for 25 days. And I've been to the Scandinavian countries and England twice, and then you know, here in the United States. And I had planned to go back to Germany in 90, 91 or 92, and then had my stroke in 91. So.
Have you been back to Germany since you were stationed over there?
No, that was my one special trip I was going to make when this happened to me.
It's a beautiful place. It is. What we have gone through in a terribly attenuated form. Your military career and your life around it. On your time in the service, is there anything about that time that I haven't asked you about that you'd like to share? Or what was meaningful for you? What other people?
One thing that I think of often is when I was in Bremerhaven, we went to Berlin. That was when you had to go through the... And we went through the Russian sector. And how the train captain got off the train, you know, and he had to give him the list of this and that. We had to draw our curtains and couldn't see any, peek out or anything. They were walking up and down the tracks with their flashlights like they knew what they were doing, the Russians, like they knew what they were doing and stuff like that. And I thought it was quite interesting how they were so afraid we were going to get in. It was something they shouldn't have.
When you look back, do you just see that as intimidation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How much when you were there... Given the tensions, were they worried about spies among you?
I don't ever remember anything within our group, no.
Because certainly back stateside, there was a lot of concern about spies and communists and everything else.
Oh, I know it.
So you didn't feel like that you were under a security dragnet? A lot of fun. Well, we've turned it over, and somebody who was visiting Berlin, and I was there right before the wall came down. So I know when you're talking about going to the Russian sector, I've experienced that intimidation. You are in a state where there are a lot of veterans. Have you been active with other veterans since you left the reserves, or what kind of connections have you had?
Yeah, I've been really active in the American Legion, and always go to all the state, and went to a lot of the national conventions all over, you know.
How active are women in the American Legion?
There are some. We had a pretty good group, but... they're all dying off and so on, and getting on up there. But I think the American Legion helps to weld some of these people together that we'd never have met before. And
so for you, the alumni group hasn't been through other WACs, but been through the Legion then?
Mm. And I was with the VFW for a while, but it's not very active around here.
Right.
But with the American Legion, I've been pretty active, and just till the last few years, because I can't get out and do what I used to do. I still belong to a post and do what I can.
If we were looking for ways to help track down other women veterans, would you say Legion would be a good spot to?
It'd be an excellent spot.
Because we tried formally to do that with them, and I think. Knowing somebody who's actually in it working, I think would be helpful for us. So, Ms. Carter may come back to you with some questions on who to talk to around here about that. When you left the service, do you feel pretty good about the way that the Veterans Administration kept in contact with you, kept you abreast of services and things that were available to you as a veteran?
No. I was having some medical problems when I was in business college, and I couldn't get any help. You know, I don't know what kind of insurance I had, but I lose my voice. but I had a hard time. And then when I came down here and got active in the Legion, I had a stomach hemorrhage. And fellow from that heads the Veterans Service Office here called me right away and wanted to know if I had insurance, and if he wanted me to have him transfer me up to Salisbury, stuff like that. So, I don't think they were very helpful. You got to have a Legion or a VFW advocate for you, or DAV or something like that.
You think that's a problem for all vets in general, or women vets in particular?
No, I think all of them. And I try to tell people that are veterans that one advantage of being in one of those organizations, you just got a better foothold.
Well, and just like I say, in our experience, just trying to track down women veterans, it's been surprising how little information we can find generally about them, unless they're self-reporting or actively keeping in contact. And I guess what you're saying is the same way on the benefits side, is that they're not going to come looking for you when they have something for you. You have to go ask for it.
You have to go ask for it.
Okay. Well, we have gone through about all the questions which I'm supposed to get through with you today. We talked about advice that you might give to other people. Did you know of any other, any of your brothers and sisters, any of their kids join the service, or did any of them join the service?
I think I had a nephew in there for a while, and he got out in medical. He was hurt in Iraq or something, and I had another brother that was in the Air Force, and his girls wouldn't think of doing something like that.
But so for you, if you have a chance to recommend it, you will to women. And I guess that when you look back, and a lot of people, when they look at the changes that have happened in the role of women in the workforce the last 50 years, and they say that one of the big things that's changed, the change is caused by the fact that women were able to do so much through the military. Do you think that being a woman in the military helps to make you a pioneer? Do you think the group of women who worked in the service helped pioneer other changes in the workforce?
I think so. I think they've shown that they're very capable and can think for themselves. They don't have to be told exactly what to do.
Well, I'm anxious to imagine with you visiting Australia and Scandinavia and England and Germany. And I know you've had a lot of wonderful experiences through your time in the service and the worldview that it opened up for you from a town of 1190 and actually taking the world and being comfortable and finding your place in it. So I appreciate you sharing with me and with the university and those who take a look at this, how the service affected your life. So,
well, I've enjoyed it. I've had a good life.
Sounds like it. Once you learn to get air conditioning in the South, the key to survival around here. Well, again, thank you on behalf of the school, and thank you, transcriber, wherever you may be. Don't go yet. I'm back on tape. I just wanted to ask, and we were talking this follow-up question, because, Sanderson, you were in charge of...
I was the commander of the Women's Legion Post.
Which wasn't a common thing, but you had a post that was all women in Charlotte. There were several posts here in Charlotte. And that had to fold after you had your stroke in 91, because nobody would take place. Mm-hmm. How many women were in this post at that time?
I think about 25 names we had.
25. And at its peak, how many you think were there?
Well, I wasn't here, because I think between 45 to 50, the year 45 to 50, they probably had 35 or more.
When did that get started? Right after World War II, or when did that post start?
I think
started?
It was about 47.
Okay, so early on. But it was... it's interesting because, again, it's sort of like having the WAC as an independent from the Army. You have the post unit independent
from
for women, in a sense. So the guys can do their guy things and the girls can do their girl things is what it amounts to. Okay. But the story of how veterans associate, I mean, the fact that women veterans are very rarely on a regular basis included in Veterans Day celebrations.
Well, now, I always was here until this past few years.
But again, you had to go make yourself known in that capacity. It wasn't an outreach thing. And I guess you would have gone because of your past work with the Legion. That's a very special day for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I wanted to make sure that that was on file because I think the story of women veterans and how they stay connected to their military experience is one that we want to track down. So glad you reminded me of that. Okay, I'm going to go bye-bye now.